This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to 1-1.
With a bit of a technical difficulty there, apologies. It is the new normal, of course, and we are here to take you through it. You're here with Lin, Xiaoning and Roshan. Roshan's coming to us all the way from his home in Petaling Jaya. Hi over technology, Roshan.
Yes, and what a wonderful way to broadcast, I have to say.
I love that echo, actually. I thought it was part of the sound effects. I like my sound effects.
Yeah, I think we all do. I think that's why we've got a new bell at the 9 o'clock hour to kind of start us off to the races. But we do have quite a lot lined up for you as well this morning within the next hour. So later on after the 6:30 news bulletin, what do we have?
Well, we'll be looking at some very faraway places, one including Sweden and its own, how their experts maybe are a bit regretful of the way they handled the crisis, for lack of a better word there. So they're talking about maybe they could have done things a little better. We also talk about how the world's longest growth streak has come to an end, and that's Australia.
Okay, and I'll be talking about a certain minister who was apparently buying some food from a little lady without a license. But I'm more interested in the questions about how easy is it for these people to make a living?
So remember, you can always weigh in on our conversations. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be tackling the subject of whether or not you enjoyed the lockdowns first, though. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. That was Muhammad Ali with Faithless, and you're here with Lin, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, there was an article in the BBC News talking about, you know, some of the perhaps upsides that people found when they went actually into the UK's version of lockdown. Because suddenly a lot of them, you know, who were perhaps real workaholics, found that they didn't actually have that much to do and could actually take time to smell the roses. So I guess the question now for us here would be, was there anything that you guys enjoyed about the movement control order?
Well, after I got over the initial fear, I would say, and I think I was concerned because, you know, this pandemic was something so new, right? And the fact that we were all forced to stay at home. And at that same time, so little was known about it and the infection rate in Malaysia was rising. So I think there was this overwhelming fear and overwhelming concern as to how bad could things get. Added to that is we were still working and we were reporting the news, which at that time was, I would have to say, the most depressing ever. We had these headlines, global recession, worst ever since depression, since the 1930s, unemployment's going to rise, we're all going to be poor.
The world's going to fall down.
Then in the meantime, there's no vaccine. People are dying. You know, so I was caught in this rut for a while. But I think the main thing is I did try and keep as busy as I could and as quickly as I could to transition to this new routine. So did I enjoy the lockdown? No, I did not. To me, it was a necessity to flatten the curve. But I have to say I'm a social person in my own way. I miss just the mere fact of having the time and the chance to meet my friends and family and just the simple pleasures like hugging them, which we can't still do to today.
That's true.
That's the part that bugs me.
What about you, Roshan? Was there anything that was, you know, a little bit of a silver lining for you perhaps during the MCO?
Yeah, I don't know. Working from home was interesting. Of course, just to mark the fact that there's a lot of privilege in what I'm saying right now. The fact that I still have a job, the fact that we weren't as I have the ability to be comfortable, right? There are a lot of people who aren't. And I there were some things that were interesting. It was a learning experience, I think, the way I look at it. But, you know, empathizing with the BBC article about having a clear calendar. Now, we were still working for and still in the office, but having more flexibility with that calendar, I was able to get more things done in the day, but non-work things, things that I would normally not do with regards to the family and all of that. So it was interesting. But I mean, with Xiaoning, I agree with the fact that, you know, I didn't enjoy it necessarily. But as a naturally social creature, it forced me to be not social, which was a very interesting experience. And I kind of liked the fact that there was nothing on my calendar to do in terms of, oh, I need to go see people. I need to go to this place. I need to socialize over the weekend. I did nothing on the weekends, which was actually quite refreshing.
Yeah, I think I'm the most antisocial person out of the three of us in studio this morning, or figuratively in studio in Roshan's case. So my calendar is not particularly socially busy on a normal day. So I guess for me, it was nice to be able to actually just stay at home without any other demands on my time. You know, this is of course on weeks where I was working from home, and I was working in my pajamas from 5 o'clock until 10. But I guess the overall, even I had my limits. There was a point where I actually sat down and I was like, okay, you know what? 3 weeks into this movement control order, now I am missing human contact. Took me 3 weeks, but I got there. And that's when, you know, you reach out to friends to say, hey, do you want to meet up over Zoom? Do you want to play a game online? And that's also a form of privilege, right? The fact that we do have that ability to take advantage of the technology available to us to facilitate our social engagements so that we're not socially distanced even when we're physically distanced.
Yeah, I mean, we are in a privileged group. We still have our jobs. None of us got sick. So yes, we're lucky, but it's just this whole, I would say the new normal really required some adjustment for me. It wasn't the easiest, but I think the main thing I did was to just keep very busy and also acknowledge that it is okay to feel this way, to feel that you don't have to be in control of everything. And sometimes in life, you just have to let go, say your prayers and hope for the best. In the meantime, it also allows you to refocus on what you think is really important, which is family, your friends, and not to also ever take anything for granted anymore. Because we had a fantastic, you know, since World War II, I would say, there's been very little civil strife. You know, most pandemics have been put under control. Globally, things have been good. People have, you know, come into wealth. Of course, there's still pockets of poverty. But otherwise, things have been great. But we shouldn't lose sight of what's really important.
I think, yeah, that it's true that the movement control orders and I guess the threat of this COVID-19 does force you to reevaluate some of the priorities in your life that perhaps got buried when you are, you know, subsumed by the busyness of the everyday work life.
Yeah, so did I enjoy lockdown? No, but I learned a lot from it. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about life. And like just reiterating Xiaoling's point, this is the biggest disruption that we've had since World War II. For multiple generations, people have never had to face something like this. But personally, there was a lot of, what's the word? Not to sound too spiritual woo-woo, but a lot of self-awareness and things like that, that I think I would not have got otherwise. So, yeah.
So let us know what you think. Was there anything that you enjoyed or perhaps learned from the lockdowns or the movement control orders that we experienced here in Malaysia? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we'll be taking a look at some business that's been happening in the Federal Territories with regard to food truck licenses. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Feels Like We Only Go Backwards by Tame Impala, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, this morning we have another story from the Malay Mail, but it's been creating a bit of a splash over on social media because Federal Territories Minister Tan Sri Anwar Musa created this bit of a stir yesterday when he bought some food from a food truck hawker and posted it on social media. And his tweet raised some eyebrows because he highlighted the fact that the seller did not have a license to trade but appeared to make light of the matter. So Tan Sri Anwar later clarified that he didn't condone illegal trading but understood that times were difficult for petty traders and that efforts should be made to facilitate their livelihoods. So for me, this is really just a bit of a PR gaffe, right? Because I don't think he should have maybe tweeted about it the way he did, but I understand the sentiment because this is the movement control order. Everybody's a little bit pressed, a little bit uncertain over their economic futures, even more so if you belong to the B40 category.
Yeah, that's why I want to pivot this conversation, not so much about what Tan Sri Anwar Musa did, but more in the sense that how easy is it for these petty traders or petty hawkers to actually get these licenses so that they can make their living? Because I don't have, I'm just curious, what is the process involved? And are we giving them, like, you know, FDBKL, the FT, are we giving them platforms in which they can do their business in a legitimate way, right? Because as we know, unemployment is high. You know, for 2 months, these petty traders couldn't make much money. Some of them were very clever. They went online, they did delivery. But for some that, you know, that wasn't available to them. So now we got to get them back on their feet ASAP, right? As soon as possible. So what is DBKL doing, or what is the FT doing? Are we kind of helping them in that process? That's my question.
Roshan, what about you? What are your thoughts?
I think it's empathy is important, right? At the end of the day, everyone needs to make a living here. I think it's just the optics that like you said, right? The PR element of it isn't great, but it's nice to see the empathy side of it from the FT minister. And it is, when you want to make it easier for people to be able to open up businesses, whether it's food. And I think KL as a city has been trying to move away from food stall vendors into food trucks. That's something they've been doing over the last few years, I think since 2017. They just got to make it a more transparent process. The fact that she doesn't have a license yet speaks to a much larger problem of their ability to conduct business, which is something that needs to be easier. Because, you know, when it comes to small businesses and micro businesses don't have the sophistication to, you know, get into the legal aspect of it. All they want to do is just set up shop and start making a bit of money. And we have to make it as easy as possible with the correct restrictions and safety protocols and all of that. But applying for the license needs to be done as simply as possible.
Yeah, I think, you know, the woman in question is, I think, one of the It's a good example of kind of the struggle that you face as a B40, someone in the B40, right? She earns 500 ringgit a day, if that, from her stall. Her husband passed away. She's the sole breadwinner of her family. So what is she to do? Yet she doesn't have a license, but perhaps she can't afford to wait for a license to come through. She has to somehow put food on the table. The question, I guess, is for me also when I look at this story is, yes, empathy should be there. We should perhaps talk about maybe giving an amnesty for punishments or enforcements of the law during this period, because this is such unusual times. But then the other part of me is also wondering, where is this empathy when it comes to foreign workers?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, right? There's so many groups that require our help. But yes, yet we also need to have a framework, I would say, in which to operate, because we cannot have, and this is the truth, we cannot have every operator opening wherever they want, whenever they want. And we do know there are always some people who just make, you know, who don't follow the rules at all. So, you know, even though the license may be available to them, they just don't care. And then, you know, they litter, they make a mess of the place that they operate in. They have no consideration for, you know, the people that live in that neighborhood, for example, because they operate till late hours of the morning, things like that. They throw the trash everywhere, they clog the drains. So that doesn't work either. I guess it has to be a bit of both. So the regulators, the Federal Territory Ministry, DBKL, needs to kind of come up with a realistic and more long-term, I think, longer-term plan to resolve these issues and provide a platform for these petty traders to operate in, okay? At the same time, the petty traders themselves need to abide by the rules, apply for the licenses. And these licenses shouldn't be ridiculously priced, because what surprised me every year is how much these Ramadan Bazaar licenses can go for. And it's a lot of money. I mean, we have had callers on the line to tell us that, you know, they make as much as 50,000 during that period. Hey, kudos to them. I want them to make the 50,000. But the license to in which they operate shouldn't cost 10,000, 15,000, which we heard, you know, sums like that. I'm like, there needs to be some balance in it all.
I think there is also a bit of a question of whether or not the government stimulus packages are actually effectively utilized in the cases of women like this food stall owner, right? Because the government has taken very particular steps to ensure that these makcikias, you know, for lack of a better word, are protected. And yet, she still doesn't have a license. She still has to operate her food stall illegally. So, you know, where is the money going to? Where is the aid going to?
Yeah, I think the so far, all the packages actually have been really about putting money into people's pockets, mm-hmm. okay, which they needed. Because for 2 months, there was no income coming in. The next phase of the government stimulus should be helping these people create their own income. It needs to go one step further than that, right? There's no point just handing out money, you know, and not thinking about, you know, the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think optically, so it just comes down to this, right? The government needs to be consistent in the way it operates when it comes to allowing businesses to work. I mean, there are plenty of barbershops that are closed till today, right? And they're coming out with the SOPs this week. There is a need to follow the rules overall, right? There's a reason why we have licenses. There's a reason DBKL has all these things. And empathy is important. There's no doubt about that. But I think, as you mentioned earlier, Shawnee, the framework is also important because once we start coloring out the lines when it comes to things like this, you get a bit more lax about it, right? It's like a habit that grows in the wrong direction. And we want to enforce basically a society that follows the rules when it comes to getting licenses to operate businesses, and the government's job is to make sure to facilitate that process in the simplest way possible. Because you don't want to give handouts forever. You want to teach people how to make money. Like the adage goes, right? Give a man a fish or teach him how to fish. You got to do one of the two, and then they can start building their own businesses. But I think KL did have that vision, right, of moving, I think, up to 2020 to move roadside stalls over into food trucks. That was one of the steps. Let's see where they can take it from here on out.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there, that the government should be the facilitator in this case. But are they actually the facilitator, or are they just kind of the purveyor of red tape? You know, the World Bank did a study a few years ago, I think at this point, looking at the ease of starting a business. And Malaysia didn't rank very highly in terms of, you know, how easy it is for people to actually take that step to start their business. So perhaps that's something that the government needs to look out for. And let us know what you think about it as well. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us over at BFM Radio. We've got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up for you though. But first, here is Friday I'm in Love by The Cure. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was the Queens of the Stone Age with The Lost Art of Keeping a Secret. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Shaoning and Roshan Kaniton. Now, we have some international news stories for you this morning. Morning. Taking a look, first of all, at Australia, which has seen its almost 29-year recession-free run come to a close. So this has ended the developed world's longest uninterrupted period of economic growth. Government data yesterday showed that GDP declined 0.3% in the first 3 months of the year. And it looks like that downturn is set to deepen in the current quarter as the full effect of COVID-19 shutdowns take hold.
Yeah, I just love the fact that their treasurer, Jos Frydenberg, responded when he was asked, is Australia in a recession? He just said, yes. That was it. Just one word. And it's true, right?
There's no need to beat around the bush, right?
Yeah, I mean, why deny it, right? And then go on into this whole explanation about what's happening. It's a fact. Guess what? Australia's not alone. Practically the whole world is in a recession. And, you know, either you're there or you're going to be there very soon in the next, you know, quarter or the next two quarters, right? But for Australia, of course, their combination of one of the largest fiscal monetary injections among the G20 countries. And I think they've been very lucky. I mean, they've also had the right measures in place. They've managed to suppress the outbreak. So activity is already resuming in Australia. And unlike the US and Japan, where governments struggled to deliver cash to those most in need.
This exercise, an injection of the live virus of racism.
Sorry, that was me. I apologize for that. My phone just went crazy.
Okay.
That was a live stream brought to you by my Apple iPhone for some reason.
Anyway, so what happened is that the Australians were lucky because they managed to inject stimulus and most of the people managed to get the cash very quickly. So since then, Scott Morrison's government, they pumped in 259 billion Australian dollars or 13.3% of GDP into the economy to support workers, households and businesses. Now, that's not going to be enough because I think Australia is looking at doing more.
Yeah, data on Tuesday showed that household views on the current economy current economic condition lifted about 15.7%. But yeah, this is the end to the world's longest growth run, which is kind of sad, but it's what, 0.3% down? It just inched into a recession. And in fact, I think on roommate.my, they've called it the panda session. I'm not sure if that's going to catch on, but I thought it was pretty funny. So they're also looking at the spending data, seeing that major lenders are seeing a renewed optimism. But where you're not seeing renewed optimism is over in Sweden, because the architect of Sweden's controversial lighter coronavirus lockdown has for the first time conceded that maybe they should have done something a bit more strict about the entire situation in response to the high death toll relative to their population and their region.
Yeah, I think Sweden has had a death toll much higher than some of the cases recorded in Denmark, Norway, and Finland, right? So all those three countries have imposed stricter lockdowns and so far seen far lower infection rates than Sweden. Sweden has 40,000 positive cases and 4,500 deaths so far. This is in a population, by the way, of just 10 million people. Denmark, in contrast, has seen 580 deaths, Norway 237, Finland 321. Sweden reported a further 74 deaths just yesterday.
Yeah, they didn't do very much. They didn't ban it much. I think they only stopped large gatherings. Universities were closed, but schools remain open to younger children. And, you know, restaurants and bars continued to keep serving people. I don't know whether it was their government's policy to kind of consider this, you know, herd immunity, which after a while people dismissed because the cost of it was too high. So let's see, you know, what will the impact be on the economy? I think, but meanwhile, in the US, there has been other news, right? Because the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, has upgraded charges against Derek Chauvin to second-degree murder. Now, this new charge carries a sentence of up to 40 years, 15 years longer than the maximum sentence for third-degree murder. Now, facing charges of aiding and abetting him are going to be the other police men who were at the scene of the crime. Now, the state attorney did emphasize that winning a conviction actually will be hard, because there's only been one case in that state to have successfully secured a murder conviction for a police officer.
Not very encouraging, that.
Yeah, because the burden of proof is going to be stronger, right? It's going to be harder to prove certain things. That's why you have the different classes for murder there. But it is a sign of how they regard this. And it will be. I'm not sure how they're going to receive the news, but the protests across the country continued. It stands thousands of people defied curfews and took to the streets of cities on coast to coast for an eighth night. Well, they did go through curfew. I think the rioting and all was less than compared to the last few days. Most of the protests have been peaceful, and there was less looting and vandalism overnight, and clashes between the police and protesters were more sporadic. Meanwhile, the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, has come out to say that he opposes involving the Insurrection Act, which is basically bringing the military in to deploying the military within the country, defying the orders of the governors. So this is a big thing. I think the last time they saw this was in 1992, the LA riots back then. But obviously, times have shifted in terms of tone of the situation. And it would be a big deal if President Trump pushed ahead with something like this. And the fact that you have the SecDef saying that he's not into this, some former generals who normally keep tight-lipped about this have also come out to say that they're not very happy with this current situation, especially after he used the military to clean the way for him to get to the church to have that picture with the Bible.
Yeah, it looks like the White House certainly is going to have a lot on its plate, not just dealing with the protests, but also looks like probably the White House considers as their people stepping out of line. But we're going to be taking a look at what's happening over on the front pages of our newspapers in just a bit. So be sure to stay tuned here on The Morning Run after these messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Pixies with All I Think About Now, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin-Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanison. 6:50 in the morning, Thursday the 4th of June, and we've got the newspapers in front front of us this morning, both the physical and the digital, and we're going to be telling you what's on the front pages, so to speak. So the New Straits Times I have in front of me says SOP for schools ready. So this is in regards to the guidelines that are set to be distributed today to potentially allow schools and teachers to make the preparations for schools to reopen. And I think this is mainly for secondary schools, if I'm not mistaken, but correct me if I'm wrong. Among some of the things that are going to be implemented, including that students will no longer be allowed to eat in the school canteens.
So in the fields, I mean, around the school.
Standing on a corner on the curb.
I suppose they don't want the kids to kind of hang out together. That's the idea. But yeah. Good, I mean, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, if you ever observe children, right? Getting them to follow the rules is one thing. And then it's a natural thing, right? They will want to get hang out with their friends and like get up to a little bit of mischief here and there. So I think that it'll be interesting to see what kind of SOPs are in place. You know, how are they going to get the kids to follow the rules?
Absolutely. So lots of questions, I think, still going to be come up with as we look at this back-to-school blueprint. Roshan, what do you have in front of you?
Yeah, I've got the star paper, but, you know, Shanning, you talking about breaking the rules there. Immediately, the song Breaking All the Rules When We Get Together just started playing in my head. And now I can't get it out.
Breaking the Law by Judas Priest. Isn't that your favourite song?
Yeah, if she said laws, I think I would have gone with that. But Breaking All the Rules just seemed to bring that song. Pop song is more catchy, I guess. I've got the star virtual paper in front of me. People's interest first, going with the headline. This is, of course, news coming out of Johor, where I think the Sultan has asked for the State Assembly to focus on the people instead of politicking. I think that's one of these stories that's coming out, and that he will he's looking at his own actions if they don't put the politicking aside. But here, the photo on the front page, though, is about childcare centres, because now that they're only being able to operate at half capacity to maintain physical distancing and safety protocols, it's going to be more difficult for them to keep the same number of kids, but also for parents. I mean, where are you going to put your kids if you have to go to work, right? So that's going to be one of those concerns. Another one that's pretty eye-catching is no plot to overthrow Muhyiddin. This is on page 3 of The Star, and this is basically following that meeting between Dato' Sri Zahid Ibrahim and Dato' Sri Najib Razak at, I think it was Najib Razak's home, or was it Zahid Abidi's home? But basically talking about how they're ready for the next general election and bringing the whole gang back together, and that they have no plans to overthrow Muhyiddin Yassin. I don't know how this makes you feel, but it does make me feel certain things. I will not say what things, but they do make me feel certain things. And if you open up Malaysia Kini, it's a lot of it news around Johor, but there's also some news around the telco situation, where the ministry is now seems to have U-turned around news that came out yesterday that they were going to give out certain 700 megahertz spectrums to, I think, was it 4 parties at that point?
Yeah, and I think we're going to be covering that a little bit as well later on during the 7 o'clock hour. But Shanning, you have the Malaysian Reserve open in front of you. What's interesting there?
Yeah, the big headline is KTMB and RAC merger on the cards. Now, we do KTMB here refers to Kereta Api Tanah Melayu, and is expected to be merged with Railway Assets Corps following both parties' failure to fulfill a restructuring deal. Apparently, this was something that has been worked upon since 2016. And the reason for this is that, you know, KTMB is suffering major, major losses. According to the AG Auditor General's report in 2018, KTM's losses stood at only just 2.83 billion ringgit.
And oh my gosh, Anand, for a second, I thought you were going to say trillion dollars.
No, billion.
My heart sank for a second. I was like,
no, but 2.83 billion is still a lot of money for our national railway.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of money.
And the problem is that it's a recurring issue. It's not a one-off, right? So how do you balance this all? Because there is a necessity to have a train service in Malaysia, but clearly it's not profitable. So whether this merger works, and then begs the question, if this KTM doesn't work, will the high-speed rail work? You know, I mean, so many issues, especially in an environment where basically, the government is a bit stretched. I mean, we are fiscally constrained.
Yeah, and we spoke about this yesterday with Francis Hutchinson of, I think, the ICE's Yusof Ishak Institute to talk about whether or not the KL-Singapore high-speed rail is feasible at this time, whether or not the Perikatan National Government has the bandwidth to deal with it when it's also facing its own political troubles.
And, I mean, KTM does have a social obligation to fulfill. There's no running away from it. But how do you balance it so that the losses don't continue year after year?
Yeah, that's going to always be the issue, right? The fact that you have that social obligation. So even if you look over to the US and their Amtrak rail services, there are probably only three routes, the most popular routes that are profitable, and they subsidize the rest of the routes, right? But overall, Amtrak, which is American Track, I guess, has also dealt with this for years upon years. So maybe we have to come to a point where it's just that the trains are more often than not are going to be unprofitable. How do we manage that losses, I guess?
And if we take a look very quickly at the Malay Mail, their lead story here is fire department reminding shopping malls to ensure that emergency exits remain accessible during the CMCO as shopping malls start to once again come to life. And of course, they also have a story here from the Health Director General, Dr. Noor Hisham, saying that the transition in government does not hamper the COVID-19 fight, as it shouldn't, because the COVID-19 fight is the most, I think it's the largest emergency that the entire world is facing. So we should definitely ensure that all the priorities and all of the attention is focused on COVID-19 at this point in time. But right now we are heading into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and after that we're bringing you the business end of the morning run. But first, here is some music for you. Counting Crows with Accidentally in Love, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.